Hi, I'm Eric Nakamura, and this is a podcast taking place in Hawaii in Tamlin Tamita's executive suite.
Executive princess, you know, suite at the Halekulani, one of the sponsors of the Hawaii International Film Festival. It's 31st anniversary edition, and it's a lovely, lovely hotel.
So explain, why are you here?
I'm here be at the request of Anderson Lay, for the one of the program directors for HIF. And he asked me to become a juror. Actually, he asked me to be here for the 25th anniversary of Karate Kid 2 first, the screening. And then he asked me to become a juror, along with you, Mr. Nakamura, and another gentleman by the name of Nate Cohn. And we're the three jurors for the narrative feature.
So tell me about the Karate Kid 2 thing, 25 years later.
Changed my freaking life, Mr. Nakamura. It's like I was telling somebody else this morning, is 25 years ago, I was known as the Karate Kid girl, and now I'm known as the Glee mom. So if you want any more evidence that 25 years has passed, there you go.
So so what were you doing before the Karate Kid 2?
Nothing. I was going to UCLA, history major, you know, running around. Was not a dorm student, so I was commuting from Northridge, and I wanted to become a teacher, history teacher. I wanted to teach kids the ways of the world, and how to navigate their way and their, you know, on their journeys through life.
So how did you get into a movie if you're a kind of a student?
Through Nisei Week, Helen Funai. She was another former Nisei Week queen, and which I was selected.
That's right. You were a Nisei Week queen.
That's
right. All about it.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I forgot all about it.
Yeah.
And that has nothing to do with being a pageant or being a bikini model.
Nope.
It has nothing to do with any of these things. It's more like a community spirit.
Community spirit representative,
right?
About and you know, welcoming and representing the Japanese American community and the Nikkei communities in Southern California, because she gets to represent not only like LA, but you know, the surrounding cities and Orange County too. It's another city.
And did you represented what, San Fernando?
San Fernando. I'm a total Valley girl. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I was like so nervous competing against the Gardena, Torrance girls, and the West LA girls, because they all had it. You know, totally all had it.
Yes. At that time, West LA, did they really have it?
Yeah.
I'm from there.
Yeah. Actually, our girl was, our girl that year, Janice Kurashige, she was more of a quiet intellectual type.
Whereas, she lost.
Yeah. No, she didn't lose.
She
didn't lose.
Okay, technically, there's no losers.
There's no losers. That's right. That's
but there is a first place.
There's a first place. That's right. The one who wears the shiny hat.
Okay,
as I
so
say.
That was you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. I've seen actually photos still pop up if you use Google. I can the picture of you as
that's
the
right.
Nisei Week Queen. So, okay, so how did you all of a sudden change that into acting? Because that's not the same as acting.
No. Helen Funai, she was a 1963 Nisei Week Queen.
Right.
She was contacted by the casting director for Karate Kid 2. It's going to be in Okinawa. I need Japanese or Japanese-American girls. So Helen sent over a whole slew of Nisei Week queens and contestants.
She didn't just say, Tamlin, you're the queen.
No.
How about if I just sent only you?
No.
She sent
a number of us. And
I,
I dressed up in yukata and tried to mimic my mom as best I could. And there you go.
So that means you kind of, there's no acting class or school or anything like that?
No.
So that means you just kind of decided, okay, I'm going to do this. And it.
Yeah. I knew what kind of responsibility and, you know, whatever degree, you know, because that's whatever I define it, you know, from day to day role model I was. Because it's like, you know, you're stepping in the shoes of Karate Kid 2 franchise. I'm Karate Kid franchise, and this is the second installment. Is it going to make or break you, or make or break the whole franchise?
And we're talking 80s, right?
Yeah, 85, it was released in 86.
Okay, but then who were the other Japanese-American actresses at the time who had experience, who tried out for the role too? Weren't there any, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, that time?
Not that I know of, because the only one that I for sure know that were in the business were Kim Miori. Rosalind Chow was out there.
Right.
Joan Chen was out there.
Yes.
Lily Marier was out there. And those are the ones I know off the top of my
head. Not a lot, right?
Not a whole lot.
Now. Okay.
Mm-mm.
Awesome.
Mm-mm.
All right, so you got in at a very interesting time for Asian America. But
yeah, totally.
Also, no, the movie was awesome.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Like, oh my God. I do treasure that kind of that experience.
Well, what's it like jumping in and all of a sudden just having to act on daily with, you know, a whole different thing? Trailer, maybe? There's camera crew, there's makeup, there's all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, was that easy to just jump into? Were you like, okay, I could handle this? Or was it kind of like a culture shock, you know?
All of those things. It was very much of a culture shock. The whole process of auditioning and going to work with the director, it's John Avildsen, who did Rocky, you know, the first one.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, I mean, that's Rocky and the Karate Kid franchise.
Is, he did all the Karate Kids?
Well, I don't know if he did all of them, and for sure one and two. Okay. I don't know if he did three.
Did he do Rocky three? Probably not. Huh?
I don't think so. I think he did Rocky, just the one, the best one.
Yeah.
And so
that's more of an indie film. If you watch Rocky one,
it's yeah,
you watch it. It's kind of an indie film.
It's kind of has that rawness, and it's like, you know, a bunch of nobodies.
Definitely
in here.
Gritty.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, you know, the whole story about, you know, good versus bad. And
it wasn't a boxing movie exactly either.
No,
you know,
it was a triumph, you know, of your spirit and your will.
But then Rocky two and three became kind of boxing movies more than anything, right?
Yeah.
It was like action was
it's
boxing.
It's to feed Mr. Stallone's ego.
Yeah.
It and, you know, whatever roided up, you know, phase he was in his life. But the whole filming thing, everybody took me by the hand and led me through. I mean, from John to Ralph was the second one. Jerry Weintraub was the third person, the producer.
And who's Ralph? Ralph Macchio?
Ralph Macchio.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and Jerry Weintraub, the producer. And the last of the power moguls in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one who did Ocean's Eleven and, you know, that whole franchise. Then the cinematographer, Jimmy Crabbe, and Pat, and Nobu, and all the boys. We're still very close, all the boys.
Yuji.
Yeah, huge. And I texted Yuji and Joey, and I go, where the hell are you? How come they didn't invite you? And they go, I don't know. Why didn't they invite me?
Yuji was a West LA person maybe, right?
No, Hollywood.
Hollywood?
Hollywood.
The whole time?
Hollywood through and through.
I used to see him in West LA sometimes.
Playing probably basketball.
Is that what he was doing?
Yeah, basketball, okay. And I think he was dating a particular girl out of West LA.
Mm.
Yeah.
I used to run into him all the time. Like, there's Yuji.
Yeah, or eating, right?
Yeah.
Those are the places to eat.
It was food places.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it was a part to hang out. So
yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, that, again, just going back, trying to remember all that. I was lucky. Everybody led me by the hand.
So then, to this day, I guess it's still like something that people.
Oh yeah, they
like,
go.
The fans will just still like if they don't know you for anything else. That one.
It's like I.
Is
have
that
to,
is that good?
I look at a person and I go, oh, okay, this one's probably in his 40s, so I'll refer to Karate Kid. Or if it's a woman, you know, between 25 and 40, I'll say join that club. And then if it's a young teenager now, it's Glee.
But it's dudes that are probably the Karate Kid 2 fan. Is it mostly guys to this day?
No, really? not. They're more sweetly, I guess, embarrassed at the fact that in meeting me, or excited at the fact, because they go, oh my God, I was so in love with you. And it's just that, you know, confession right out that admirance.
Sure.
And they go, oh, that's so
yeah, I've done
cute.
That. I'm over that already. I've done that one already. So
that was
a decade ago. I pulled that one. Didn't work.
Yeah. No, it's always, oh, this is so sweet. But then, you know, it does, it reminds me of, you know, for meeting my idols and stuff.
But at the time, it wasn't like idol. It was just like there was no. Hardly any Japanese Americans my age that were on the screen that were like, I was like, wow, she's really pretty and awesome. She's got this bigger role and, you know, she's kind of like, oh, epitomized a lot of the people I knew, Japanese Americans or other Asian Americans, in one on a screen, right? That kind of was how big it was for me or how important it was. That, you know, it's not like, oh, I want to be her because I don't want to be a female.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not yet anyway, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I did see, I was like, wow, she's like, the only one that I really know on TV that's like my age that's portraying somebody my age, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes they portray an older person or they're in a situation, but this was like
an appropriate time period, because a lot of the stories that were shown were like, you know, the ones we refer to still like internment camp or kung fu stories or kind of things like that,
it was there, but that thing was in English.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't have to read what was going on or anything.
No, it was really, that was what I was special about it. You know, when I think back, it's like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, you knew.
Anyway, yeah.
That's a really awesome thing.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it is. I don't think I've ever been really ashamed of it.
Really?
No, never.
Never got tired of it, though? You're like, oh my God, my new stuff. I have so much new stuff, but you're only talking about the 20-something year
no,
ago.
No, it was my gestation period in whatever. It was really, really special. I was unformed. I didn't know anything, and I really took everything to heart, and it was really, really special. I think I became an asshole after that because I thought I was the shit. It was like, but, you know, because, you know, you think, wow, this is a super ride. You do the film, and then you see the film, and then you go on PR tours all over the world, and people, you know, because, you know, PR things, you know, they arrange these events. And,
sure, you're a star.
And you're a star. It's a star-making machine, and, you know, you get a little full. I got a little full of myself, absolutely, sure, but, you know, it's, I get knocked down, and it's like, okay,
what was your next picture after that?
I did TV. I went back to school, and then I go, yeah, I'm going back to school. That's it. And then I started doing TV because I guess that's just the nature of the beast.
What TV were you doing then?
Tour of Duty was my first one, so I played a bad guy right after. I actually shot...
Tour of Duty? I don't remember that one.
It was the Vietnam War.
Wow, okay.
And it was shot in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And of course, we were playing Vietnamese Vietnamese villagers, and I shot Mako.
Oh wow!
I think yes, was it Mako with the AK-47?
Oh my gosh!
I'm pretty sure
you had an AK-47.
Something like that, a big old gun. Yeah, okay. And then I was shot myself too.
So what were the? You said you got knocked down. When did that happen, or how did that? What did you mean by that?
I think you didn't. I didn't get. You know the neck. For some reason, I expected that you jump from Karate Kid 2 to being the next thing, whatever movies were out there at the time. Maybe I thought, I can't quite remember, but I know I assumed I would probably be in the next John Hughes movie or the next installment of Indiana Jones or something.
Did you even get to read for those things? Were they even looking at you for that? Or was it just completely, no, you got to play only an Asian of some sort?
I didn't get to read for those things, really? But it was just that kind of expectation. You know, I thought I was, you know, the in the elite class, and I didn't have to audition anymore or whatever. I just, because I was the girl with Karate Kid, and... You know, you learn your lessons.
Didn't work that way.
No, not at all. But then, you know, there's other things that happen within, you know, acting communities and the Miss Saigon thing, and knowing what kind of portrayals were out there showing Asians or Asian Americans are going. Okay, we need to fight from the inside too. We need to say let's you know, ask for opportunities to go for the roles that are not, you know, specifically Asian.
You've had a lot of big roles anyway.
Absolutely.
You said there might have been some downs, but there's a lot of big roles and big, like, I thought, milestones in that time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just that my expectations were such that I didn't have to work. I didn't have to, you know.
Did you ever go to acting class or school or any of that kind of stuff after?
I did. I took a course in acting with a well-regarded teacher, Lynette Katselis. But again, I was lucky enough to be working
the whole time anyway.
The whole time. Yeah. So I would have to pay for a session or pay for a series of classes, and I have to get a refund because I was getting work. So the consistency of the work was my real teaching grounds.
Yeah. Then, I mean, so I guess another milestone you mentioned was Joy Luck Club.
Yep. I was really, really shocked to get that. Really, really, really shocked. Because everybody, I think they're thinking, the people in charge of choosing how to cast this movie, they were all finding June first, the character of Ming-Na got
to
play.
Right.
And
she was kind of the, yeah.
She was the titular, character. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, the
what'd you say?
Titular.
I don't ever use that word.
Well, I showed you the back entrance, so I might as well go there.
Okay, yeah, sure. Upper front. No,
but she's the character that everybody follows throughout the film and the book. And I thought I did good, and all of a sudden I hear, no, you got Waverly. Oh my God, I got the mean bitchy girl. And
yeah,
that was fun, the
underwear drawer, wasn't that what that was?
The underwear and the condom drawer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember, I was like, oh, she's pulling out the underwear.
Yeah, she's showing Mama. She's like, showing Mama, she does the nasty. Yeah. Some things you don't talk about with Mama.
That's the only scene I remember.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
I remember a few.
I know, actually, coming from a dude's point, does it seriously sting you too to know that there was not a lot of Asian American male portrayals that were positive?
Oh, that time?
Yeah.
For sure. I remember. I mean, Russell Wong was like the bigger star at that time.
Yeah.
You know, he was kind of the one that had like opportunities or was crossing over a little bit into like playing not a role that has to be an Asian guy. Could have been anybody, right? He was in New Jack City as the
that's right,
you know, little like assistant cop guy.
He just looked cool
with a gun running around, right?
He didn't wear a uniform.
I think he's wearing a leather jacket.
He was totally Chow Yun-fat in that.
He looked cool.
Oh my god!
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. It's like there wasn't a lot. I paid attention, but it's not like I can do anything. I would just silently complain in my head. I'd be like, God, what's wrong with this?
But that
movie was just, yeah, those four females. That was a best-selling book. It was a gigantic novel, right?
Yeah.
That was like, you know,
I think it's still her most popular novel, too.
Probably. But that's like, you know, every big best-selling novel out there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's kind of whatever. Any John Grisham book, Jolla Club was outselling it probably, right?
Yeah, I would
say. It was right alongside. It was a woman's story, specifically a woman's story.
Yeah. So I think the idea that it's going up against like John Le Carre or, you know, Grisham or any of those, you know, depictions of the detective or the, you know, the good guy versus the bad guy movies.
It's kind of funny because that movie then comes out and I think it made a bunch of people mad anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Asian Americans especially, right? Got mad. It was like, wait, but it was a book anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I just remembered there was like anger for that, on that movie.
Exactly. And I think we still discuss about it, but I never found out why there wasn't a real good, you know, just one single great Asian American dude in that movie, because I do, you know, I go, wow, it is a chick flick. I'm not going to deny that. But
wait, who was the guy you played again, opposite your
Christopher Rich? Yeah, all American, blonde, blue eyed, freckled boy. But that's how he's depicted in the book.
Uh-huh.
But the main point of contention is why Lauren Tom's husband was played by Michael Paul Chan, who's a great
actor.
In the book, he was Holly.
Oh, okay.
And we don't know. I don't know why they switched.
I remember that guy.
You pay for the ice cream. You pay for the
right.
And it was like, such a dick.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and it's like, why does he have to be Asian? Why'd you give that to be?
Well, that was a milestone. At least, if that book was made into a movie today, there might be some reason I will think that they're going to cast people from Asia over an Asian American, perhaps.
That's what I thought too.
There would be four women cast, maybe two might not even be American. You know, somehow they would make it work, even with an English problem, but they would still make it happen. I could see that today, whereas there they did cast four Asian Americans, right?
Right.
One was any Canadian? I don't know. Or if not, they're all American.
No, they're all American.
Yeah, see, that's kind of like a weird thing, because I don't think they would do that anymore.
Yeah, they would be afraid. Yeah, they would be too concerned about pulling in market and going, well, I don't want four unknown American girls.
Right.
I want
you guys weren't unknown.
Well, you know, in terms of global market, you know, we'd want Michelle Yeoh. We want
Zhang Ziyu. That's what I mean, right?
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Truly, totally.
Bummer. And how many concentration camp movies were you in?
There has been a few. There's at least two that I can think of right off the top of my head. But people, yeah, and I wish I was in that movie. I wish I was old enough to be. I wish I was in Paramount to Manzanar, because I think there's a better delineated movie.
You're in the one that took, I forgot.
With Dennis Quaid. Alan Parker's Come See the Paradise.
Come See the Paradise.
Yes. The bizarrest name of a film, in my portfolio. It's like, what the hell does that mean?
That made more people mad too.
I
guess you're in a lot of movies that made people mad. I realize.
Yeah.
Never thought of that.
Provocative, you know, topics.
That one made people mad. I remember.
Yeah, absolutely. And I had to talk about it and defend it and say it wasn't my choice, but I know what the story that I was involved in. I had to be responsible and not play it, you know, geisha girl or you know, the story element that people were so up in arms against was, well, why do you have to fall in love with a Holly guy? Because at the time in 90 or 89, 90, it was still that kind of thinking that you need a white character for the audience to identify with. And it's like, oh my God. And clearly it did not work as well as the family story. And I think filmmakers or storytellers see that movie as an example. You don't have to, you know, really cater to what you think that the audience, what the audience's level of intelligence is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they can see a family with our faces that look like this and say they're just as American as me.
What was the other one you were in?
There was a television film called I can't remember. Hiroshima.
Oh, I don't remember.
Out of the Ashes. That was with Pat.
Really?
That was with
cool.
But I was a Japanese American who was in internment camp, but she met and married a Japanese national, so she was in Japan.
That's not
the
John
the
Percy related book, right? It's not like a novel. Did it come from a novel, or is it just, was that like a mini series?
It was a novel, and I think it was John Hershey.
Oh, so it's just Hiroshima.
Yeah.
That's Hiroshima. A very famous book.
Yeah, Hiroshima.
It's just old now, but
yeah.
I believe that's...
The thing about it is that movie came right on the heels of filming Come to the Paradise.
But those kind of books, I remember as a kid, would be bestsellers. Like, that was probably a best-selling book, and this dude would keep writing books that had to do with South Pacific or Pacific Rim War stuff.
Yes.
And he would write novels, and those were like, I remember seeing those on the bestseller, on the shelves at like shops that don't,
bookstores,
not even Borders, not even pre-Borders. I'm talking like Walden Books.
You know,
right?
What I remember? It's in the library.
Yeah,
seeing in the library. That's where I picked it up. Yeah.
And you were in another one. The one in Hawaii was that related?
Picture Bride.
That's even older than that. That's pre-concentration.
That's pre-concentration.
That's like 1920 or 10 or something.
That's
right.
That's
I remember that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That was Kayo Hata, right?
Yeah, Kayo Hata. And we did it here. And that was a great, great experience because I was just talking about with, I think you were in my company last night, when I shot the scene with Walt Louis.
Uh-huh.
And when I shot the scene with Walt Louis, that was not when I shot the scene with Toshiro Mifune, that's not acting. That's like fucking A. I'm working with Toshiro fucking Mifune, and he's like, oh my God, the nicest, most, one of the most noblest, kindest actors, you know, a legend just working, and he's, you know, because of his age, he wasn't able to remember his lines as, you know, as quickly or succinctly as possible. And when he would mess up something, he would just immediately go, this gesture, gomen nasai.
Right, just hand in his
face. Like, hand in his face and go, gomen nasai. That's so Japanese. He goes, gomen nasai.
Sure.
And then mochido, you know, it's like so awesome. And I was just, my mouth is agape during that whole scene.
Wow, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Really, who's the woman?
Yuki Kudo.
That's it, okay.
Yeah, she was in Jim Jarmusch's.
Sure.
And Snow Falling from Cedars.
Right. She was in Mystery Train, right?
Mystery Train, that's right.
Yeah.
She did was in Mystery Train. And she was really our heroine in making that movie. Cause
wait, there was an older woman too, right?
No.
There was no older woman too? I thought there was an older woman.
There was an older woman in a subplot.
Right.
Kati Kuroda, who's from here, but she's out. She's in New York. It was just Yuki and me, and then Akira, and then Akira Katayama, who played her picture bride husband, and then Kari Tagawa, who played my husband.
Ooh, the bad guy.
The bad guy.
That dude's awesome, but he's evil. Kari, what's his name? Kari Tagawa.
Hiroyuki Tagawa.
Yeah, he is just king of the evil.
Yeah, he's got that stink eye look down.
I've seen him in person, and he just... His natural look is the stink eye.
He's the stink eye.
Even his smile is a stink eye smile.
Yeah,
he's amazing.
Yeah, he's
kind of scares me a little bit. I'm like, oh, this.
Oh, no. You've met him.
I've never met him, and he scares the crap out of me.
Eric, oh my God, I will have to rip that facade off because he's really one of the sweetest guys out there.
He is the king of the bad guys.
He's king of the bad guys.
And another one, a bad guy that I met, Al Leong, right? You know, okay, when you meet him or even see him, he does. In person, he's a smiley guy. There's no way he looks bad.
No.
In movies, he's like a comical bad guy, but Carrie looks like the evil.
Yeah, there's something about Carrie. Yeah. He's able to manifest.
He's Tojo straight
dark.
Up. He is evil.
Yeah. Dark. Oh my God. I can't believe that because of the fact that he plays bad guys so well and he plays that evil warlord Asia,
Sure. He could be a drug lord. He could be everybody.
I don't know because it hasn't been released yet. He was the boss, the king boss in Mortal Kombat, right?
Uh-huh.
He's the king boss in Tekken.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, so I go, you're the king, you're the boss king in two gaming, video game franchises. How's that? But then when you see Ryan Reynolds, as the Green Lantern as well as the faceless guy in the whatchamacallit.
Which one?
X-Men.
X-Men, yeah.
Is it X-Men?
Is it X-Men or what? I forgot what it is.
It's X-Men because Wolverine, Wolverine fights him at the end and then, he comes out of that nuclear reactor. So I guess you know,
actors. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, going to, you know, front. And then the most famous one is Hugo Weaving, how he can be the elf king in Lord of the Rings, and then Mr. Anderson's nemesis in Matrix. I go, hey, I want to be I want to have
that dude. That guy's pretty versatile.
He's badass.
Yeah, he's pretty versatile. He makes it work.
He's
What do you think about like today's environment of TV compared to all the movies and stuff? You know,
the movies I think are behind. I think the movies.
And I'm talking about for yourself though.
Oh, for me,
and how you fit? Because you know you've done a lot of movies, mm-hmm. you've done some TV, but now it's like you can do TV, and I'm just wondering if the quality kind of. You know, the workmanship of a television show now, does that equal something to do with movies that, you know, you're used to?
I think I'm much more challenged and much more satisfied in doing the smaller independent movies where we don't have that stress in making money.
Right.
It's just like, oh, this is a great story. Sure, I'll do it. I'll do it for free. Blah, blah, blah. Where TV is the one that there's just more, much more volume. But the depictions of people who look like us are much more realistic. And the doors are, you know, being flung wider and wider. And the story's a little bit more interesting.
Right.
You know, you don't have to play.
Wait, so how much indie film are you doing compared to gigs, I guess.
I know, I just did a small, tiny film with the producers of the Star Trek franchise. Tori Mell, who's the husband of Brooke Lee, you know, Miss Universe 1998 or 97.
Mm-hmm.
Him and his writer-director, Greg Aronowitz, did a film called The White Room. And it's the first narrative film that's going to be done 360. Remember America the Beautiful at Disneyland, where you see the screen and you see...
Like, oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's a white room. You see six characters dressed identically, and they're all falling asleep on a big white table, and they wake up one by one. And they don't know their names, their own names, and there's a gun on the table. So what happens? What ensues?
Wow. When's that coming out?
Pretty soon. It's in post.
So you're one of the six?
Yeah, I'm one of the six. So I have to go shoot the last pickup scene at the end of the month.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully it'll be... It's at being edited right now, so they just have to do the pickup, the last scene. And we'll see, maybe by the end of the year.
Cool.
Yeah. So that one is
that's that sounds bigger than indie though. I guess whatever indie
means.
No,
it is indie because there's no money. It was in a studio as big as this hotel room.
Oh, okay.
And a tiny, tiny set because it's only the white room.
You don't have
to go outside or anything.
It's like what's the other movie that a guy plays in where he's basically in a box that's buried under the dirt?
Oh,
I never saw
39 Hours. Or
I don't know. I don't know anything about it, but I don't know how much of it was just in this dirty box.
Yeah.
I hope. That'd be super low budget.
Yeah. That's right. I missed that too.
I never saw it. It's just one of those boxed in type movies. There's a few of those, right?
Where
it's crammed in a small space, and then they're almost the whole movie is in the space.
Yeah, or in the box. So they must have, you know, cut out this side of the box. It's just like the section in Kill Bill 2,
right,
where Uma Thurman has to dig out, and it's like, okay, then I love that kind of idea. It's like, okay, here we go.
So how much are you working? Like, are you working almost all year long, or do you have...
No. I don't have that driving ambition to, you know, get scripts or be sent scripts or asked to be sent scripts. I've always said I'm an itinerant worker. It's like migrant, you know, just whatever.
Is it enough? You just work enough, and then
that's good. It's enough, but the last 5 years, I noticed I've been transitioning to parent roles, and then I go, that's fine with me, and... I think it's just an age thing because our whole culture is enamored of the hot moms, and I go, you know, it's not something that I'm obsessed with. I'm just very, very lucky to have retained my looks or, you know, maintain some kind of facsimile.
So wait, you're playing hot moms like in Glee, right?
This is what I've been told, and you know, just the kids.
Right.
It's the kids that go, oh my God, you're Mike Chang's mom. You're so hot, and I go, what? How could you say those two things in the same sentence, in the same breath? I go, I'm a mom. Hot and mom don't belong to you. But then because we're all thinking about Madonna and Demi Moore and Uma Thurman.
No, it's a new paradigm.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
I guess the generation that grew up with these people still are accepting them as these hot people at 45 or even 50.
Yeah.
They're still hot.
Yeah.
You know?
They're taking care of themselves.
Maybe Yeah, it wasn't like that before, exactly.
Yeah. So now we can say with equivalence that moms can, you know.
Well, they are taking, people are going to take care of themselves more. I guess supermodels, same way, right?
That's right, Cindy Crawford. Well,
supermodels of the past are probably like getting back into shape and looking great.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a long time ago it was drugs, partying, all this stuff. Now a model is like, oh, shape, in shape 24/7,
in shape,
all the time, right? Yep. Every actress.
Not ashamed of plastic surgery or whatever.
Less of that partying stuff. It's more like business, you know?
Yep. Raw food, vegan food, you know, whatever, you know, alternative.
Do you do that?
I do yoga. I do Bikram. That's it. But I do Bikram yoga so I can eat anything I want.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not a bad thing. It's like, I want to be able to have ramen today and udon tonight and, you know, lokomoko in the morning.
So the mom roles, is that kind of like a something that, is it changed kind of the way your career trajectory goes? I mean, if you play one, it seems like you'll end up playing another eventually and another.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you end up playing on a prosecutor, is that what it was? DA? Was it DA?
I'm the ADA. I was the assistant state attorney.
Right. And that's like a very, that's not a kid role.
Yeah, it's very authoritative and very exposition, you know, riddled my dialogue. I have to tell what, you know, what's going on and who's being prosecuted, who's being accused of blah, 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 blah. So I always have to, you know, act with some semblance of intelligence. But always be quick about it. Yeah. You don't have to, you know, weigh it down with so much emotion. It's just very dry, very quick. Yeah, you're just telling the audience what's going on. That's your duty. And I go, okay. Same with the doctor roles too.
Asian doctor roles.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Curse Robert Ito for being so iconic in the Quincy series.
Yeah.
Because Archie, Kyle, Masioka, myself are all the coroners on all the shows, and I can't remember.
There's even probably assistant coroners, tons of, computer experts, but that's a whole different thing.
Yes.
Lots of like
technicians,
forensic people.
Scientists.
Well, but that's Robert Ito too, right? Forensic scientist. Now it's with computers. Mm-hmm. Then it was like him slicing open a body, being
the
guy in the lab,
getting his hands
there. Now it's like a little bit of both. There's computer stuff too.
Yeah, that's what we were just talking about it amongst
my
friends and I. But the fact that Grace and Daniel on Hawaii 5-0, you know, they're going like this, you know, like
that's ridiculous.
Giant iPad kind of screen.
Sweeping stuff. I'm going to throw it on that wall.
This is what's going to happen too. And it's awesome. So that's how far we've, you know, but it's still...
Yeah.
With a bigger picture kind of thing, with a lens, we're still seen as the smart ones, which is not a bad thing.
No.
Which is not a bad thing, but because we still embrace and still celebrate the fact that Daniel was the first one announced, and he was the de facto face of Hawaii 5-0. It's not Steve McGarrett. It's not the character.
No. I think. Daniel Day Kim's character is interesting because it kind of plays, he's the wiser guy.
Yeah.
Right? He's the guy that kind of keeps everybody in line.
He's the elder statesman.
Yeah. And he's the one with links to that dude's dad and
mm-hmm.
with links to like the department. With old, you know, he's got like these strong ties mm-hmm. that are bigger than the McGarrett role.
Exactly.
That's kind of how I see it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like,
He's kind of playing Confucius at the same time as being Daniel
Day
Kim.
Yeah. Without being so sagey about it approachable.
But he's like probably... maybe a little bit older, but not that much older.
Not
on the
that
show.
Much older, yeah.
But yeah.
But he still carries.
Yeah, he's got the balance.
Yeah.
You know? He doesn't have the hot head.
Yeah, exactly. And he doesn't have the pressure of holding it all on his own. But he's
cool.
The face. He's great.
So who are your friends? You mentioned your friends. You're talking about this and that. Who are they?
My friends here. Well,
just in general.
It's so cute. You think I have a zillion friends? I go no. I don't have a zillion. The friends that I have here are just regular local country guys from the other side of the island, from Waipahu and Wahiwa, and we just hang around and call, you know.
But like in LA, you know, you must have like a big network of people that you work with or friends.
I have close knit circles of friends. I consider you a good friend because I text you when the peach donuts
right.
or when they come in. But yeah, the friends that I consider close are very. It's a handful. It's a very small handful, and they're not in the business. They're just people that I've known since kindergarten.
Oh, wow.
The other one I know since I was 15, and The other one is my sweetheart, and he's coming home today from New York, so cool. I get to FaceTime him. But very, very
FaceTime
small.
Him?
Yeah, FaceTime him. It's like, okay, that's my new toy. FaceTime.
Right.
FaceTime, yeah. But very, very, very small. Very small. Yeah, but I do have to do lots of events, and we all know each other. And I do respect and admire and love to hang out with them at the events. But other than that, you know, if there's something that I just want to, hey, you want to go grab a pizza, coffee, or something? Let's go. Okay.
All right, let's go. So, do you actually have a still like? I mean, you mentioned you're kind of itinerant worker.
Mm-hmm.
But are there times when you're just thinking, gosh, I want to go for it and really try to get the biggest roles I can? I mean, is that something that you're
I have that kind of mentality. It's just...
This is competitive out there,
it's
I know,
very
but I'm wondering,
competitive.
You know, is it worth that fight at this point? I mean, maybe when you're 20, you might want to fight that, but I don't know. Are you still interested in that kind of fight?
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely in that kind of fight, because I think there's still a myriad of stories to be told of our generation or generations, you know, beforehand, you know, concerning period pieces. But I don't have to be the Grace Park. I don't have to be the Maggie Q. You know, those are... They're serious. They're of a different genre, and they're going to be the ones who are headlining, who can headline a show, who can
right.
headline a film. I don't need to do that, mm-hmm. but it's in terms of the bigness or the impactfulness of the story or the movie or the television show that I want to be involved in.
Cool.
So yeah, it's like if there's another show that has to deal with, you know, being out in New York or San Francisco or something, absolutely. You know, that's it doesn't necessarily have to be Asian America based, just, you know, something, you know, really super interesting.
It seems like a lot of the Asian Americans have like a culty, like a at least one thing they did in the past that's kind of culty that can kind of always follows them in a good way,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
George Takei, Sulu,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, to this day,
the man of nine lives.
Yeah, he's amazing, right? Like right now, he's on a high again,
right? Because it's like. Everything. I wish I was
he's
gay.
Awesome.
I wish I was gay so I could come out too, so I could get the resurgence.
No, it's like, but it's his Howard Stern stuff, and
and
the fact that he embraces the whole Star Trek thing and not pushing it away, he embraces it and just he's really comfortable with himself.
Yeah,
and then comes out, but then just his Twitter's awesome. He's got a very pop culture existence right now that is transcending his like own, you know, just acting.
And
he doesn't have to act. He's
he doesn't
fine.
Have to act anymore. Yeah, yeah.
He's like
he really
icon.
Owns everything,
yeah,
and
he's
really come in.
Amazing.
You know, however old he is, he's really come into himself time and time again.
Sure.
And that's just a lesson for
but,
all of us.
But Grace Park had her Battlestar Galactica. I mean, mm-hmm. at Comic-Con, Battlestar Galactica is like, you know, it follows her around more than anything.
Yeah,
right? That's gigantic.
Yeah.
You know, Daniel's got lost, but then there's you've Karate Kid.
Yeah, yeah, I have Karate
Kid. But I mean,
all of us. All of us.
There's like a, you know, maybe some more like in a newer Star Trek. You know, but then it's.
That's right,
but
John. But see, John John chose the one. Yeah, he's in another, you know, franchise. He's franchising.
Yeah.
So, yeah, to be Harold and Maude. Harold and Maude.
Harold
and Kumar and Star Trek. It's like, that's the kind of stuff that, sure, I would love to, but.
Can there be more than one? Can you do, you think that's like a. So it follows you around so much that you can't really get another one like him, you know?
No.
Back
because
into
I think
it.
By virtue that you see those, you know, see those actors who could do it all, and you know, for Mark Dacascos to be the Iron Chef chairman and Woe Fat, I mean, bad guy in Hawaii Five-O and ultimate cheesy good guy in Iron Chef, is like he has the range; he can do it. So anybody else, yeah, any of us can do that.
But sometimes that culty stuff is so strong; it's like crazy. It's a lifetime of
I think that's why you'd like to see them in roles that are similar. Maybe that's why I don't know.
Maybe.
But
yeah,
otherwise, you have the other extreme. You have Mark. He has to be the bad guy because he has to.
Sure.
He has such a farther way to stretch from you know, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
It's but you know, Grace is blessed and saddled with the fact that she's an intelligent, extremely attractive, kick-ass actor.
Mm-hmm.
And so she gets to, you know, choose, you know, whatever combination and whatever she wants to emphasize. So I really do applaud and watch over her and, you know, to see what she's doing. It's great. Maggie is another girl. It's like, she's another local girl, too. It's like, you know, really, really, really great to see those that kind of success. But, yeah, I see that same kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Desire still in me, but
cool.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not gonna sell my soul for it, but yeah.
No, that's rough. Huh?
Yeah. But I'd like to be just a, you know, the real geeky nerdy person that, you know, I really think I am.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about you know, putting on, you know, a ball gown or whatever, right. You know.
How often are you reading and looking at scripts and doing that whole, like, you know, Hollywood machine type of stuff?
It's not very often.
Okay, so...
But there are seasons, you know, right. There are seasons. Both for TV season, for TV season. But because cable season is so... cable TV is such a big, you know, world, there's arena to play in. There are actually, I think, two TV pilot seasons, which is traditionally from January through
cable
March.
Cable made its own rules up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Changed the game, right?
Exactly.
It's kind of cool, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think that stuff on cable is amazing. Like, all the shows that you heard of and you never seen because there's just too much,
mm-hmm.
there are a lot of them are really good anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like I just discovered Breaking Bad.
And
like,
a lot of attention, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like... I heard people mention it, and I watch him like, I've never seen this actor. I didn't know anything about it. I watch him like, oh, he's really good. Next thing I know, he's in Drive, you know, the movie Drive.
Yes, he
plays like the mechanic, the garage guy.
The young guy.
No, the older guy.
Not Bryan Cranston?
The older guy?
Yeah.
I don't know anything about
that guy. Didn't you see Malcolm in the Middle?
I never watched it. That's why.
Bryan Cranston. It was like,
it's like, you know, it's a TV guy, right?
Yeah.
But it's like... I'm like, wow.
But
I don't have like those some certain channels, and he's on a show that's on a certain HBO or Showtime or one of those things.
Yeah.
I don't have it. Never even knew about it. Heard of it, and then I watch him like, this dude's pretty rad.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. It's like the avenues are gigantic to the point where it's so big that you can't keep track of it.
Yeah,
all.
You can't keep track of them.
Impossible.
And you have to be able to be flexible or malleable enough to move from those kind of worlds. Because Malcolm in the Middle was that culty kind of Fox TV thing.
Yeah,
and then Breaking Bad, and he's just this badass crystal crack ass meth dealer, right? And he's, you know, and they get the freedom to swear and up, you know, up and down.
So I mean, it's a whole different game.
Yeah. And he, the depiction is so gritty and so, provocative. You really don't know where he's coming from, except the fact that he really just wants to provide the best for his family, and he's seeing the end of his life. So it's like, what the fuck? You know, I have nothing to lose.
Right.
How are you going to be able to act? And that's the wonder of that particular role. I just want to put out that, again, it's... I was saying earlier, you asked me earlier about how TV and the movies are, and... It's interesting to me where we're at and seeing the critics, you know, the criticism and the hype and the accolades given to a lot of the cable TV shows. But if you look, if I look a little closely, why are there TV shows that are going back to an era where there wasn't a lot of people of color originally? If we're seeing Mad Men, it's like the New York advertising agency world. First of all, the women are not that powerful, but the ones with the you see on TV. Because they're doing it by, you know, their machinations and their wise ways. But you don't see African Americans in that show. You're not going to see Latinos. You're not going to see Asian Americans.
I've had a conversation about this once.
Really?
One of the persons I interviewed, Leonardo Nam, young director.
Leonardo, uh-huh.
He said that Hollywood's because of the recession, conservative casting. So more conservative than ever, he said.
Yeah.
So like a guy like him who probably should be working all the time is having to fight for work or get a little bit harder for him.
Yeah.
And he just said, it's just the casting has changed within the last 2 years or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's just everyone got so conservative and,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know, they're no longer Asian guy reading for a white role anymore. You know, the role that's supposed to be for a white guy, but now they used to send Asians in, maybe African American, just hey, try it out. Maybe this is going to work. And like you said, there's less of that now. Just even getting to try that.
That's casting. I'm talking about the shows themselves.
Oh, that are just
it's
all
like
about
Mad
that.
Men, Breaking Bad. Are you going to see a person of color in that show?
Maybe just
not
a bad one.
Yet.
A super bad one that's small.
A small one, right?
Right.
But not integral.
You're right.
It's like
maybe Boardwalk Empire too. Same thing.
Boardwalk, exactly. I'm not whining about it. I just like to ask what the reason is because it's these period pieces. Why the redux of a Playboy Club, which is thankfully canceled, and Pan Am? It's 60s.
Oh, Pan Am bums me out because there was a lot of Japanese American stewardesses at that time, like gigantic amounts.
Because that
was an airline serving the Pacific a lot too.
Yes.
And then I look at them like, how come there's not one Asian
there's
stewardess
one.
That should be one of the four? Should at least one should be Asian.
At least, right?
Or it should not. It should be all of them.
My constant complaint over the last 15 years is that how many hospital shows have come and gone and there's no Filipinos whatsoever?
Not one. Is that weird?
really pisses me off.
Yeah, not one.
It really, really, really pisses me off.
Sure.
It's like, let's get the picture a little bit more clear here.
Yeah.
So we've got a long way to go, and we've got, of course, and that's, you know, everybody's going to be sick and tired of hearing that. But
yeah.
I do like the quality of writing on those shows. I just need to ask that those cable programs or those highly, you know, praise kind of shows open the doors to a little bit more, you know, people of color, not just us Asian Americans, but to everybody, because it's not showing the picture that I want to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Occupy Wall Street protests. Do you see the sea of color there? It's like, oh my God, it's just everybody. It's
right.
And we're not just all poor. We're all the 98, 99. Why is that number?
It's crazy.
Kind of flexing.
It's kind of crazy.
It's like either we are the 98 or we are the 99. Go, get it together. Get your label right. But it's always a, you know, it's always a struggle, and it's always a good struggle. Sometimes it's a fun struggle, and we just gotta make sure that we get in those kinds of positions of power. That's why Daniel's trying to look toward the future. I'm sure I would love to encourage people like Ming and Grace and Maggie to look beyond. Mossy, I would like to say, look beyond what you see for yourself and see what kind of doors you can fling open for not only us, but, you know, the kids who are going to follow behind us. Harry's a great example.
Mm-hmm.
Harry Shum, he's
yeah.
He, you know, he's promised his mom and dad that he's not just going to be some dancer. He's going to be a mover and a shaker and find out where the money is coming from, how to use it, how to lose it, and become a producer kind of, mogul. So it's really, really exciting. Yeah.
So how long are you going to keep doing the acting thing? Is that a lifetime? Is it a lifetime?
It's pretty much a lifetime because it's so fun. That's I was talking to you about it the other day. It's history minded.
Right.
When you research a topic, you could go to, you know, you could go Google something, you could go to the library, you could ask people and interview them what they think about this period of time, or, you know, this character or how you lived and blah, 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 blah. There's so many questions that are unending, and you can flesh out those questions as to what this person that, you know, you're responsible for creating this character in this particular story. So that's where it comes for me, is that's the fun part.
Mm-hmm.
That's the fun part. But producing might be in mind if there's something that's thrown my way and say, do you know a bunch of people who might be able to put this together? And I go, yeah. It's just asking for the money part is something
hard.
Like, yeah. Yeah, and I
there's people. There's people built to do that, though. Like,
absolutely,
I'm not, but there are people out there who are just built to ask for that money.
Yeah,
and ask without any hesitation, and ask for more than they need, and
and
ask convincingly. Like,
this is something that's going to get you great returns.
There's people who are built to do that, and just you got to find them.
It's something. It's something in their DNA or whatever. I go, I don't know. Yeah.
It's just like, are you doing stuff online? Like, do you do anything that's like part of the digital world or things that are made just for the internet?
So I'm going to put it out to you. If I had to choose something, what would you make me do?
To choose something?
Online stuff, yeah.
I don't know.
No, because I don't have, I don't Facebook.
Uh-huh. Oh, you mean that stuff? I'm talking about,
I don't Twitter. I don't blog.
No. I meant like
productions
that are meant for online only, like content online. You know, like
no,
show,
I haven't been asked to do
a
that
show
kind of
that's
stuff
like
yet.
For just the internet or
yeah, webisodes and web TV.
Yeah.
No, I haven't been asked to do that.
Webisodes gigantic.
Yeah.
Okay, I was wondering if that's like something that you're looking.
Because there were some actors on that White Room show that I was telling that do that kind of stuff,
yeah.
But they're all younger.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's in its nascent stages. It's at like beginning, so they're
right.
only doing like, I don't know how long the episodes are. First of all,
sure,
I'm assuming they're 10.
Fast. Yeah,
very very short,
to
10 minutes. But I think it's geared toward a younger audience right now. So that's what it's. That's,
so you don't use Facebook or you don't use Twitter. So you probably have a fan page on Facebook without even.
I know
doing
I have.
It. Someone probably made it for you.
Yes.
Like many, maybe
and
fans.
There, I.
The fans
I
have spoken. They
the
do it for
have
you.
Spoken, yeah.
You don't do Twitter.
No, I don't do Twitter. No, I don't do Twitter, Tumblr, LinkedIn, Dig, Reddit. See, I know all these terms, but because I could see the little icons on top of the page, but no, I don't do any of those. Yeah, yeah, but I know of them.
Right.
And I think I could log into them if there's something that's...
But you're not interested in doing that stuff? Or?
No, I think it freaks me out.
Okay.
Remember when answering machines came into play?
Sure.
Came into our lives?
Yeah.
It came... I'll tell you if it's a... Because he freaks me out still. My father was a LAPD officer, so he was very, very protective.
Wow.
He and my father, Shiro Tomita, he and his other mentor, Lieutenant Jimmy Sakota, founded the Asian Task Force.
Uh-huh.
The LAPD unit that was bilingual.
Right.
So it started in the 70s. And
wow.
So all the officers spoke, you know, their native languages.
Well, that must have been a big... Well,
huge. It was huge.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
Because there's still a lot... around? Still around, right?
Yeah, they're still around. Yeah, they're still around. But it's in a smaller unit, and it's not as necessary as it was before.
Mm.
But anyway, when the Answer Machines came out, it was the same time Karate Kid came out.
Oh, wow.
And when Karate Kid came out, there was messages left on my home phone, and we got Answer Machines, and there were nasty, threatening messages, I remember.
Wow.
And
why?
I guess people hated me. It's like, oh my God, who the, you know, they would leave nasty. I got freaked out
by
a series of them. So I never, ever, ever answer my phone, even if it's the little cell phone.
Right.
I just have people leave messages and everything.
Okay.
But that's, you know, that's the kind of technology, you know, that was imprinted. So
right.
That's why if I go into Facebook or Twitter, it's like, oh my God, it's just multitudinal.
So your dad being a police officer, that must affected your dating life. Back then, no, it was a scary.
No, it didn't affect my dating life. I
as a policeman.
No. Just maybe. I know. I maybe he did indirectly, but he never threatened any of the guys.
How do you know?
You know why? Because I was never asked out on a date.
Oh, what? Come on.
I was never asked out on a date. I am a sequential monogamist. The guys who were brave enough to ask me, I became, you know, we were boyfriend girlfriend.
Right.
There have been, you know, six of them.
Wow.
I think I could publicly say that.
Uh-huh.
Six of them? Yeah,
right.
Six of them. Or six people that I've slept with, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
It's six. But there was never, you know how people date? You know how, I'll ask you, you know how people go out to clubs, you know, in groups?
I don't go to clubs, but yeah.
Did you when you were younger?
Not really. But I know people that did. I know.
I never knew how my girlfriends did that. They go out to a club, you know, and a guy would meander over and say, "Hey, you want to dance? You want to dance? You want to drink? Okay, all right, thanks, bye." And then they come, or you know, ask out on a date, or I never.
So I figure your dad, you know, police officer man, would just be like, "Hey, son, you go to the bathroom, maybe," and the dude's there, and he's just like, your dad's like,
yeah, no.
Now's the time. I'm gonna do a secret threat.
No.
Please don't say anything to my daughter, but I'm gonna be your ass. No.
He never did that.
Or you know, just police officer puts the badge, puts it on the table, and looks at the kid.
No. My dad was pretty cool.
I watch too much TV.
No. My dad was pretty cool, but he did for my, and I had lots of guy friends.
Sure.
I'm pretty much of a tomboy, so my basic, circle of friends are firstly guys. So we would have, my mom would make shabu shabu for us, and we have a big dining room table, and we just sit there and eat. And my dad would eventually start talking, you know, about the fact that he was a strong guy, even though just a 5'10 Japanese American guy.
5'10 is pretty big at that time.
At that time, yeah. But he could rip a phone book in half.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So maybe, yeah. Now I'm thinking about it.
Tough.
Maybe the guys who were my friends who were having interest in maybe dating me didn't because my dad could.
But 5'10
is
pretty tall, actually, for a Japanese American of that generation.
Of his generation?
He's a little bit taller than normal. Like 5'8 maybe was kind of normal. 5'10 is kind of tall on the taller side.
Really?
I think so.
I guess I've seen...
For a dad? From that age?
Yeah.
Oh, dude, that's pretty tall.
Rough, really?
I think it's on the taller side. My grandpa was a good 5'2".
Okay. But you're 5'10", 5'11"?
I'm a giant, that's why. I'm the giant.
Yeah, you're a giant.
No, I'm not. I'm 5'8", right?
You're 5'8"?
Yeah,
okay.
I'm pretty typical, but no, I'm tall compared to, you know, 1940 Japanese American.
1940, yeah.
I think that's...
Yeah.
The average height must have been 5'6" or something or less, maybe.
Oh.
No.
No. Okay.
No,
I guess
on the taller side.
He was on the taller side.
Sure.
Then. Yeah.
You know, shy of the 6-foot mark, but kind of tall.
Yeah. Kind of tall.
Okay.
Yeah, but he was a cool dad. I miss him a lot. Yeah.
So are you ready for tonight's special Karate Kid tribute? I mean, these are kind of happening. I've been... Right? There's more than one. At least online, I've seen some like Karate Kid 25 years. It's
No, really?
It's been, well, in for you, it's been brought up, I've seen.
Oh, yeah. There's well, because, there, because there's this, there's screening tonight.
Right.
Yeah, that's it. But okay. I don't think there's...
There hasn't been other ones?
No.
Really? I thought I saw some stuff.
No. Well, Philip Chung from Yamyam asked me to write the thing.
Sure, sure.
But that was...
I thought there were some other screenings and stuff that was special.
I don't think so.
If not, they should do it.
No, they should do it. And they should have... People do ask me, go, well, did you see Ralph in Dancing with the Stars? And I go, yeah. And I go, well, what? You should be on Dancing with the Stars. I go, no. Because Ralph is the only one that should be on Dancing with the Stars. He's the guy. And I go, I'm just the girl. I'm the second girl. If there's anybody who should be, he's the first one. So... if there is another screening, I am, or in LA, I want to be able to say, you know, Eugene, Joey, Mark, get your butts over here,
sure,
because we're the last four.
Yeah,
you know, Danny's not around, and Nobu and Pat. So
yeah,
and you know, if Ralph wants to come out to LA, sure.
Where does he live?
He's still in New York.
Oh, he was in New York the whole time? No idea.
Yep,
okay.
Yep.
So that accent he sort of had was that kind of a real one?
It's authentic.
Okay, I didn't know.
Long Island, New York. And true family man, hasn't changed a bit, and really still sweet guy. He's mostly into producing now.
Oh, cool.
And he had a really great episode arc on Ugly Betty.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then he had that Entourage appearance.
Wow, what was that?
He was Ralph Macchio, and they're making fun of him being the Karate Kid or something, but he was Ralph Macchio Entourage, and that was a great cameo appearance. So he's going to be saddled forever with the Kid moniker, of course. But it's not a bad thing.
These are all good things.
Not a bad thing.
Running from it is always like that makes it worse. Like if it's, you know, you run from it, it actually becomes a problem in your life.
But
if you embrace it, it becomes like this thing that propels you a little more, I think.
Yeah.
You know, look at luckily William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy, for example, they were pushing Star Trek away from their lives, right?
Yeah.
Saying, no, I'm like, what, didn't he make a...
I am not Spock.
Exactly, and all those kind of things. And I'm like, you're making yourself look terrible by doing that.
Yeah.
Your fans who adore you are just like, oh, like what has my life become? You've
I'm more than that. And I go, well, yeah,
you are that too.
But you are that
the sum of all these things, and
absolutely,
it makes you better. But I always kind of like weird it out when I see people trying to like separate themselves from something that was like the successful, incredible, groundbreaking, you know, all these great things.
Yeah. Something that's, you know, been and still is a part of our lives. It's like, how can you not love him? He's beloved. He's beloved. They're beloved characters. I think that it should have been, I'm not just Spock.
Yeah. Thanks for talking.
Thank you. Thanks for hanging out with me.
Thanks for this wonderful Hawaii experience.
Oh my God, with Diamond Head. You should have,
Diamond Head in the background.
Diamond Head in the background.
And, yeah. And I'm with Tamlin Tamita.
Yes, and I'm with Eric Nakamura. Giant Robot rocks.
Oh, Tamlin Tamita rocks.
No.
Yes.
Giant Robot rocks. It's out
there. So, thanks a lot, and thanks for listening.
Thank you so very much for having me.
And how do people find you, or any information about you? What do they do? What do they do?
You know what? I have to seriously consider this. If this is a part of our world, or our growing world, I have to start considering. I think probably just to keep the onomatopoeia, twittering.
That's true, huh?
Right.
Tamlin Tamita Twitter. I don't know. So we'll have to figure that one out. But otherwise, they can go to your Wikipedia page. IMDb.
IMDb, or just the old password.
Or TMZ.
I've never been on TMZ.
Oh, okay.
Thank God, I've never been on TMZ.
Okay, well, maybe this is a start tonight. She's going to do something and get on TMZ.
I've already showed. I've already showed Eric Nakamura the back entrance, and I taught him the word titular. So,
Nipple slips help.
Nipple slips. I invited him to my room here.
Drunken something.
Yeah.
Throwing something. Throwing up. Maybe.
Yeah, throwing up.
I don't know anything.
Mooning. Yeah.
Anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you will get on TMZ.
You will get on TMZ. Yeah.
You get famous for the wrong reason.
Yeah. Instead of KK, go look for TT.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.